And welcome to the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thank you so much for joining us right here on the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we bring you this show right here on Progressive Radio Network, Gary Knowles Network, where you can find archives of the recent shows, not only for the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, but many of the excellent shows that are broadcast right here on Progressive Radio Network. And today, we are happy to have as our guest, Dr. Gary DeBrandt. And Dr. DeBrandt is an award-winning alternative healthcare provider who is deeply committed to providing compassionate and knowledgeable care to his patients. He has actually been in practice over 30 years. That's impossible to believe, Dr. Gary, because I think I know you at least that long, and maintains a private practice in chiropractic, body-centered psychotherapy, nutrition, anti-aging therapies, naturopathic medicine, and traditional Chinese medicine. Dr. DeBrandt has focused on balancing the physical, emotional, and spiritual aspects of each individual, and he specializes in detoxification, treating fatigue and adrenal burnout, the topic for today, and improving people's lives by helping them lose weight. Dr. DeBrandt uses a whole person approach, and that means looking for underlying causes of any disturbance or disruption and make whatever interventions and lifestyle adjustments that would optimize the condition for normal function and a happy, healthy life. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. DeBrandt.
Thank you, Ellen. It is a long time that we've known each other, and it probably just says we're getting older, doesn't it?
Yeah, which I actually like. I have to say that I'm loving this, the golden years. Mm-hmm. And I would say I've enjoyed every phase of life, but this one particularly, and I guess that part of that is, you know, maintaining feeling excellently well and just having, you know, a little bit more wisdom, hopefully, and having been through a lot of the ringer stuff earlier on. So to me, it's great. And I do want to tell our listeners that they can hear both you and I speak at an up-and-coming Naval Expo, and they can find out more at navalexpo.com. I don't even want to say a date because this event happens twice a year in the spring and the fall, and very soon one's coming up. It's sort of always soon one's coming up, so just check navalexpo.com for that. And what made you focus on detoxification as a topic? You know, Dr. Grant, I personally have seen you speak many times, and I remember once you brought a sauna into a lecture and showed that. So there's so many aspects that you're deeply knowledgeable about.
Well, yeah, I think detoxification, Ellen, is probably one of those core places that gets a lot of mouth speak in the media, but doesn't actually get well thought out and well delivered. And that correlates a lot with adrenal fatigue and the other things that I sort of focus on, because as you well know, there isn't anything that isn't connected in the body. And so once we start making the connections, it's important then to start developing strategies to help on all of those levels.
And also, I want people to know, and that, you know, your show will be archived right here on PRN.FM, Dr. DeBrandt, and a very good place to find you is DRD, that's for Dr. DBRANT, drdebrandt.com. And if our listeners are podcasting it today and can't write that down, it will be posted on PRN.FM along with the archived show. Now, what are the adrenal glands, and where are they located?
Well, the adrenal glands are two very small, walnut-shaped glands, and they sit on top of the kidneys, pretty deep inside the body and pretty innocuous-looking on the outside. But I'm always fascinated with the fact that sometimes the smallest things in our bodies do some of the most amazing work, and that certainly could be said for the adrenals.
Now, I know, of course, in your role as a chiropractic physician, you must see many people with lower back pain, and I have found that often relates to adrenal glands, but yet that's unaddressed in conventional medicine.
Yeah, that's an understatement, isn't it, about not being addressed. I think the adrenal glands are probably one of the least looked at and pivotal parts of our entire health system. And you're absolutely right. Since they're sitting on the kidneys in the low back area, it often correlates with low back pain. It often correlates with issues even of sciatic and things like that. And we're not looking at it. I would even go as far as to say I think adrenal exhaustion, burnout, fatigue, however you want to describe it, is at an epidemic level, and it's just simply going undiagnosed and unlooked at for the most part.
Well, if the adrenal glands are functioning normally, what do they actually do? What are they involved in terms of roles in the body?
Everything. It's not an overstatement at all to say they're involved in everything. If you put a, like imagine a wagon wheel with a spoke in the middle, and if you put the hormones that the adrenal is really responsible for producing, like adrenaline, cortisol, dehydroepiandrosterone, DHEA for short, if you put that in the center and then put the spokes to all of the areas that it were going out in the wagon wheel, you would find that they have to do with virtually every single thing in the body. Carbohydrate metabolism, blood sugar, balance, pro or anti-inflammatory cycles in the body, immune regulation, our ability to detoxify from heavy metals and put together the proper antioxidant sequence to help us protect ourselves, bone density. I mean, the list is huge. Memory and learning, cognition. I see a real correlation with adrenal fatigue in people often, and the scourge of what's happening now more with Alzheimer's and early onset senility, I think there's a real correlation there. The quality of sleep and mood, and so a lot of our mood disorders, I think, are directly related to adrenal dysfunction. And then the rest of the endocrine system, things like insulin, and whether the pancreas is functioning all right, and whether the thyroid is functioning okay, and absolutely corollary with the sex hormones, progesterone, estrogen, and testosterone. Where the adrenals go, those hormones go as well.
So you've certainly said a whole bunch of stuff. I want to backtrack a little bit because you are so knowledgeable in the various things that the adrenal gland does, and you threw out three words that people might have heard of before, but I'd like to go into more information about them, and that would be adrenaline, cortisol, and DHEA.
Mm-hmm.
So what are those involved in?
Yeah, those are the biggies from the vantage point of what the adrenals produce. Everyone knows adrenaline. We've all heard of, I'm spiked on adrenaline, or I'm high on adrenaline, or I got an adrenaline rush. Those are probably pretty familiar terms for everyone. And certainly what they relate to in terms of the stress response of fight or flight or freeze, pretty much everybody knows those ideas as well. And to understand how they really got to be so prominent, these hormones and adrenaline particularly, we really want to think about it from an evolutionary standpoint. Go back all the way to Cro-Magnon men and women and imagine, living someplace where danger might be around the corner, and you look out one time and there's a saber-toothed tiger and it starts to chase you and you have to get away. Your body doesn't think right then. There's an automatic response that takes over and your body just gets out of the way, or if it doesn't, it gets to be the saber-toothed tiger's lunch. So those things are really absolutely, from an evolutionary standpoint, developed in us in a hardwired way. And we can still think about it even now. We don't have saber-toothed tigers anymore, but if you're on the street and you hear a screech and you look up and you see a car careening out of control and it's heading towards you, it's the same phenomena. We get out of the way. We don't think. We're not doing anything with cognitive stuff at that point. We're just operating to get into safety. After that ends, that incident ends, our body resets itself. And when it resets itself, things come back to normal. All of that surge of adrenaline, takes a slowing down process, and we reset our hormones. What wasn't there, perhaps, in Cro-Magnon times, is the protracted and long-term stress of dealing with things that don't go away. These aren't saber-toothed tigers. These might be being 30 years in a job that you don't like, having a toxic relationship, caring for an elder parent or a sick child. That's a lifetime occupation. That's when those other hormones start to come into play, particularly cortisol, which is really our long-term response to stress, whether it's physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual. Cortisol is going to come out and help us manage it, adapt to it, really keep us in the game, no matter what the game looks like. And then DHEA is works with cortisol because cortisol is using up our resources to keep us in that game, keep us in that ability to adapt. And DHEA is going to make sure that we have the nutrients and the necessary micronutrients, everything, in order to do that.
So it's an important, important thing in the body.
Oh.
And, you know, like, DHEA is an interesting one because let's talk about what those letters mean.
Well, dehydroepiandrosterone. I mean, that's a mouthful if you try to say that one five
times. It is, but yeah. what I find interesting about it is the androgynous part of that word, right? When we talk about androsterone, I think it's referring to the nature of that component of this particular chemical created by the adrenal glands, which is can be androgynous, which means it could shift to either female or male hormones.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. The biggest part there, I think, is that what's happening here is that this is going to keep fueling whatever aspects of our beings need to be fueled. It's going to keep helping cortisol and working in relationship, almost like a yin-yang kind of thing, working in relationship with the other hormones in order to make sure that there's enough of everything that we don't burn out. The body, remember, from a fundamental standpoint, has one mandate, and that's to keep it alive. And so it's going to use all of its resources to do that, and the DHEA is really going to step in, whether it's female, male, it doesn't really make any difference. It's going to supply the body with what it needs to keep functioning.
Right, and it can actually shift its position. Now, I'm wondering how you feel about people just going to a health food store because they just heard Dr. Gary DeBrandt on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z and just running in and buying DHEA as a supplement.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan because we are talking about hormones here, and I think that it's complex. I mean, there's the level of what are you actually doing when you're putting a hormone into your body, and we could look at any hormone. You could look at melatonin. You could look at any of the ones that are here, and when you start putting in hormones, this really addresses what the whole endocrine system is doing, which is communication. And it's using hormones as its communication tool. It's like the currency of the body. It gets to do the work of the body through hormones. When you put one of them in without understanding the relationships between them and what happens when you trigger one to another, you don't really know where that's going to end unless you're doing something more systemic and really looking at balance throughout the entire system rather than just sticking in one thing and hoping for the best. The second part of that is you mentioned going to a health food store, or you could go online, or, you know, any of the other places you might find things. And I'm always concerned, and this is one of my biggest things about natural remedies in general, about the efficacy of what's out there. That's a huge piece for me because the health food industry is an industry. And we want to remember that people are selling things not malintentioned in any way, but they're selling a product, and they make nice slicks and covers and all of those things to tell you about the product. But the research that I've done says that there's inconsistency in terms of the actual in quality of what's there, particularly around creams and things like that. There just isn't a standardization for most of it unless you're getting professional-grade quality supplements, and those are really strictly monitored and studied.
Boy, there's so much information coming out on, let's say, bad supplements in the news lately, and I think some of it is true, which you're sharing with us as a healthcare professional who has used supplements in practice with great care and efficacy for many decades. On the other hand, some of it, I think, is scare tactics to try to keep people in the realm of pharmaceutical drugs rather than using supplements. So, like you said, it's a complicated issue. But I 100%, listeners, agree with Dr. Gary DeBrandt, our guest today, which is that hormones should not be just lightly used. Just because you hear about the two he mentioned, melatonin and DHEA, I actually don't think that should be available over the counter, to tell you the truth, because it's not like an herb or a vitamin that you normally get from food, and if you take some extra either it may be helpful or you may just urinate it out. Hormones can get into cycles inside the body and change metabolic processes. And sometimes that can be helpful, and sometimes it can be quite detrimental and throw so many things off balance that I don't think they should be lightly used. If someone went to your office and you did the really advanced studies that you do, looking at the adrenal glands and other glands, and that someone may, in fact, need some help providing one of those hormones, such as DHEA, and you recommend a specific brand that you know works well in an amount that is efficacious with follow-up to make sure you stop it when you need to or increase it, that's a completely different thing.
Yeah, those are two different animals, aren't they? They're really a very different approach. One is, I think, really looking at the complexity of what happens in a human being in any sense of the word in regard to hormones. And the other is pretty much a shotgun kind of thing. You hope for the best, and you see what's going to happen. And sometimes these things are so subtle and so, as you say, cyclical in the body, that you may not see the results for months or years if you're doing something that really is affecting you. And it might not be something that you'll ever be able to sort of tag back to using this product that you got from the health food store, under, again, the best of intentions, but it doesn't really necessarily do what it says it's going to do.
Well, when we look at symptoms, what actually, how could somebody maybe think they better come in and see Dr. Gary DeBrandt? And I know you're local, you're right in Glen Head, your office has been there for many, many years. What might people feel like when the adrenal glands get tired?
Well, that's probably one of the things that I'll say now that everybody who's listening will be nodding their heads fairly quickly, because there's so many things here that most of us have experienced in one form or another. But the biggies that I would say almost always have to do with fatigue in some particular form and pattern, sleep disorders, and then a variety of other things that sort of come after that. One of the classics is having people that wake up 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, but don't actually feel like they're awake until about 10 in the morning. So that 5 or 6 to 10 period, it's like they're sleepwalking through it, or they're just getting through, and it's all of a sudden they start to turn on, the light bulb inside goes on around 10, and those are, of course, the people who have had their first or second or third cup of coffee, and that's where really a lot of the using caffeine as a stimulant to try to perk up the adrenals comes into play. The other one is, in regards to energy, that's really quite common, I think, is having an afternoon slump. Somewhere between the time of 2 and 5, a lot of people seem to say, if I could just shut my eyes for 15 minutes, half an hour, it's like somebody plugs me back in and I'm fine again. And I can't tell you the amount of people come into my office telling me, at like 2:30 in the afternoon, I just shut my eyes and I'm gone. I can't focus. I can't think. The other one is having a burst of energy then at about 6. And you can see there's like a kind of flow to this. The energy goes down, the energy comes up, the energy goes down, and that's what happens in adrenal fatigue or when the adrenal glands are tired. And then people get tired often around 9 or 10 at night, but for whatever reason, we don't listen to our bodies and then actually go to rest then, even though they're following a circadian rhythm that's pretty important to listen to. We'll resist going to sleep then, stay up because we want to see our favorite television show or stay on the computer or whatever we're doing, and we'll be wide awake at 11. And then we won't be able to go to sleep sometimes till 12 or 1 or 2, and we'll wonder why we don't feel so good the next day when we're not able to get any kind of concrete and develop sleep. That leads to the other really big one, which is sleep disorders. In general, people who have adrenal burnout have a lot of problems with sleep. Either they can't go to sleep at night, like I just mentioned, or they go to sleep and they wake up 1, 2, 3, or 4 times. It might be because they think they have to urinate, but then they cannot go back to sleep because their mind goes on as if they turned the computer screen on, and they're just on. They don't sleep. And even if you do get to sleep and sleep all the way through, the other real big thing that I hear from people is that they don't feel rested when they wake up, that they could still sleep another 2 or 3 hours and they'd still wake up and feel like they're dragging themselves into the day. And if we think of what a circadian rhythm is like, the idea of getting up in the morning with the sun and going to bed when the sun goes down, we're really pretty much out of balance with that as a society, I think, and that's playing itself up in some of these kinds of disorders. There's a lot of other ones, though. There's things like cravings for sweets and salts, particularly when there's adrenal fatigue, lightheadedness when you get up quickly from sitting or from lying down, increased PMS or menopausal symptoms, they're really common, depression and mood swings, muscular weakness, bone loss, increased allergies and allergic responses to things, even when you haven't had allergies before. That's probably one of the biggest things that I'm seeing now more and more is people are walking in with allergies, and the first thing out of their mouth is, I've never had an allergy in my life, Doc. What's going on? Decreased sex drive, and actually some little peculiar thing, frequent sighing during the course of the day seems to be
sighing,
related.
Sighing, did you say? Like going,
Yeah, that's exactly right. Frequent sighing, and it seems to have something to do with neurotransmitters and trying to relieve, like, stress and sighing and trying to do that through changing air in the lungs. So it's an interesting thing, but you see people who sigh a lot often have adrenal fatigue.
Wow, that's a whole long list.
Yeah.
So I would say almost everybody who comes to you, and of course you have been doing this so long, that people, still you're a chiropractor, so people may come in with, like, musculoskeletal issues as an entry, but then when you do a history, I'm sure you uncover that they have a lot of these other symptoms as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You're spot on with it, Ellen. If we were to sit down and really talk to people, which again is an art that I know that you practice and I do, really listening to people and really taking a detailed history and getting the information from them, usually all of a sudden you have this canvas that's in front of you and it gets painted with this incredible array of symptoms and signs and things that are happening for people that seem on the outside to be completely unconnected. But in looking at people from a whole perspective, really seeing them as an entire unit involved in life from all the different angles that we could look at, then you get to see that there are things that are really not disconnected at all, but are actually woven into a pattern. And that pattern really often has to do with that endocrine imbalance of adrenal fatigue. And when you start to intercede, it's beautiful to be able to work not only in a musculoskeletal way, but also in an internal way and a lifestyle way so that people really can see substantial and change that actually stays and grows as they get better and feel more alive again.
Well, we're going to take just a few minute break right here, Dr. DeBrandt, and when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion about adrenal fatigue. Is it making you tired, stressed out, and fat? Maybe we'll get to the fat part when we come back, but we are speaking today with Dr. Gary DeBrandt, Infinite Wellness. So we will be right back with more right here on Progressive Radio Network.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the essential oil taken from the Australian tea tree.
The tea tree, known as Melaleuca alternifolia, grows in only one region of the world, the northeast corner of Australia. It is a full-sized tree of the myrtle family, whose oil has powerful abilities to clean and help heal wounds and skin ailments such as cuts, burns, and rashes. In 1770, the infamous Captain Cook was a lieutenant in the British Royal Navy when his ship landed in Australia. The botanist on board, Sir Joseph Banks, collected samples of a sticky aromatic leaf and brought them back to England for further investigation.
In 1923, an Australian curator and chemist, Dr. Penfold, conducted a study on tea tree leaves and discovered that their essential oils are 13 times stronger as an antiseptic bactericide than carbolic acid, considered the standard in the early 1900s. The oil contains 50 to 60% terpenes, 6 to 8% cineol, which causes its camphor-like odor, and several kinds of alcohols. In 1933, the Australian Journal of Pharmacy, the American Journal of the National Medical Association, and the British Medical Journal reported that tea tree oil is a powerful disinfectant, non-poisonous, non-irritating, and has been used successfully in a very wide range of septic conditions. Australian tea tree oil is mentioned in the British Pharmaceutical Codex of 1949, the UK Medicine List, and the Dispensary of the United States.
During World War II, tea tree oil was considered a standard issue item for all first aid kits for Army and Navy units in tropical regions. The demand for tea tree oil exceeded the supply. However, after World War II, synthetic drugs gained in popularity and the use of tea tree oil in medicine waned. In more recent times, a renewed interest in natural, non-toxic alternatives has triggered a resurgence in tea tree oil research. In 1985, Dr. Paul Belacher, chief of the phytotherapy department at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Paris, worked on several double-blind studies involving tea tree oil and its application as a remedy for candidiasis, chronic cystitis, staph and strep infections, and nail bed fungus. He stated, and we quote, "The essential oil of Melaleuca has entered the team of major essential oils and emerges as an antiseptic and antifungal weapon of the first order in phytoaromatherapy."
Try a few drops of tea tree oil in a steam vaporizer and inhale for blocked sinuses, or rub the oil on chest and back for a cough. The Australian Journal of Dentistry reported that using tea tree oil in dental hygiene and in surgery showed it to be an extremely effective antiseptic. Add a drop on your toothbrush or include it as a gargle and mouthwash. Tea tree oil can be applied directly to the skin. Although it's possible that some people may experience a mild allergic reaction, in-depth research has shown tea tree oil to be non-irritating and safe.
So, listeners, think about including tea tree oil, the first aid kit in a bottle, in your natural medicine chest.
Welcome back to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and today we are interviewing Dr. Gary DeBrandt, and you can find him at drdbrandt.com, drdebrandt.com, or come back to prn.fm if you are enjoying this show and you'd like to listen to it again, or you'd like to tell your friends and colleagues and children and people you know who are going, wow, the symptoms that Dr. DeBrandt is reviewing, that sure sounds like me. Maybe he can help me. Come back to Progressive Radio Network, prn.fm, anytime, and check out the archives of The Natural Nurse. It's under N for Natural Nurse Show. And you can listen to it again, download it, share it with a friend. That's one of the great things about Progressive Radio Network. Now, another thing is that both myself and Dr. Gary DeBrandt lecture twice a year at the Naval Expo. And let's talk a little bit about what they feature at the Naval Expo, Dr. DeBrandt. And just want to tell people they can find out more at NavalExpo.com.
Yeah, the Naval Expo to me is a great opportunity to see a variety of the finest alternative and holistic practitioners on Long Island in the metropolitan area bring forward a whole host of subjects and material that just probably isn't really getting a lot of airtime in too many places that the general public will see. So you get an opportunity all day long to check out vendors, to go listen to lectures, and to ask questions that may really be unanswered in your quest for better health.
Not like that, like just like you said, I would say the most challenging part of the Naval Expo is that every single hour there are five fabulous lectures,
mm-hmm.
all on holistic topics. So I would say the greatest challenge is trying to find out where you want to go, which is why it's great to go to NavalExpo.com. First of all, you can get a free magazine, and this is a full-color slick magazine about the event whenever it's coming up. Again, it's in the spring and the fall, and there's one, you know, very close to whenever you're hearing the show. And then you can sort of plan your day. Or you could go the other way if you like that better and just come into any lecture you'd like. And I know what some people do is they sit in the back, and they're one of those lecture junkies, so they'll come into each one, take all the handouts where there's always lots of free handouts, and then sort of leave, you know, discreetly and go to all five at some point during any hour. So however you want to do it, it's a wonderful setup. And, you know, we're getting like over 3,000 attendees at these events now, Dr. DeBrown.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's really grown, hasn't it? And
yes.
As you're saying, the beautiful part is that there's so many things going on that it's impossible to get to them all. It's probably one of the reasons why you see so many people returning to the Expo every season that it's there twice a year and coming back four, five, six, seven times. It's like seeing old friends sometimes.
Yes, and also, if they, let's say someone hears today's show and they go, wow, you know, maybe I would really like to see Dr. DeBrandt as my healthcare provider, and what he's talking about definitely resonates with fatigue and sleeplessness and all these things that I am also experiencing. You know what? It's a great way to come and meet you, just to feel the human vibe about, yes, this would be the person for me. And, of course, you give out lots of free information that day as well.
Absolutely, and we're also going to be doing some electroacupuncture screening, so people can get some hands-on answers to questions that they may have, again, been looking for and not finding all over the place. So it's an opportunity to really experience the person and to really get a real kind of sense of who a practitioner is and whether they're the right fit for you.
So now you mentioned something that might be brand new information and people may have no idea what you're talking about, so why don't we talk about that a little bit? What do you mean by electrodermal screening?
It's a great, to me it's the medicine of the future, and it's here sort of now. It's a non-invasive way. Basically we're using an electroacupuncture device. It doesn't actually puncture the skin, it's just a probe on the outside. And through the computer software program we can ask questions of your energy field using acupuncture points, accessing the meridians, and basically ask any question that we want to ask. We can delve into, are you suffering from adrenal fatigue? Are there endocrine disorders? Is there, you know, resistance to weight loss? Are you suffering from food allergies? These are non-diagnostic. We're not using them for diagnosis, but we're using them to give information that is on a more energetic level than just doing a blood test or some other thing like an MRI or things like that that can show concrete things in some ways, but not at subtler levels. I'm finding people are wanting answers to questions that don't involve just what drug do I take or what thing do I do, but what's really going on underneath the surface. And for me, as a practitioner, frankly, that's what fascinates me. It's what's driven me to be who I am. It's what's driven me in my own life to cure my own, you know, diseases and get healthier, is to find out what's underneath the surface.
And you're talking about emotional connections as well as maybe some long past a physical infection from childhood.
Absolutely.
That influences things now.
Yeah, there's a theme here that we're much more complex than just a set of physical symptoms.
Well, you know, I love electrodermal screening, and I used it all the years I worked at the Corsello Center for Complementary Medicine. So I actually got my first electrodermal screening device in 1976, so it's not new at all, but it's advancing. And it's amazing how close you can get to a patient. I think it's fabulous that you're using that as one of your interventions. And what people always said to me is things that I came up with after using the electrodermal screening devices is, oh, you know, you must be psychic. But it really wasn't psychic, but it did open avenues of understanding into that patient that you really just can't get from a questionnaire.
Mm-hmm. So very, very true. I remember those original machines very, very well, the Vegas and the different kinds of things that were there, and they were prototypes of things that have advanced so much further, and the technology has gotten so much sweeter in terms of really being able to refine our searches and answer some really pivotal questions for people.
I would say if somebody wanted a visual on that, think back to Star Trek. Remember the doctor on Star Trek used to just hold some kind of really electromagnetic field reader over someone?
Yes. Bones, right.
The bones, and truthfully, it's really very similar to that.
Yes.
To where it's picking up, and that's the other thing. You're not, when people think acupuncture, you're not so much putting energy in as picking it up.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. We're reading. We're allowing the body to speak in an uninterrupted way, so it's a very gentle interface with the body. You're really basically saying, what's here? Let me allow the body to have its way of communicating that to us. And it, from a very loving and tender place, I say this, most healing that I've ever seen go on, most really great work that's ever gone on, is not by the biggest and broadest and most intense interventions. It's by the subtler allowing for a person's energy to get known, get heard, and then do what's necessary to gently bring them back into balance.
Yeah, it's a wonderful technique. Now, when people come in and explain to you that they have this set of symptoms, and you can automatically know that adrenal fatigue is definitely part of the picture, if not the main complication, are there other lab tests that you might do to confirm that?
Yeah, there are. I think there's several that you can think of, but I think the probably gold standard one that I use is saliva testing. I find that there are several reasons why it really works somewhat differently than either doing a blood test or even a 24-hour urine, which you can do as well. The saliva test, basically hormones are either unbound or bound. If they're bound, they're bound with protein, and that's the non-active part. And if they're unbound, that is the active part. That's the free part of the hormone. Blood, when you do a blood work, it really doesn't pick up. It picks up everything, and it doesn't discriminate between one part and the other. What's really important is to get the unbound part, which only represents 2 to 5% of the hormone, but you need to see that part because that's the part that's actually doing the work in the body. And the only way that I know to get that and get a pattern of that is to do it through the saliva testing, because the bound part can't pass through the saliva glands. So the salivary glands block it, and you only get the unbound part, the one that's actually doing the work, in the saliva. And the beautiful part about working with the saliva, too, is it's easy. People just basically drip saliva into 4 test tubes during the course of a day. And what that affords us is, instead of one static moment in time like a blood, it actually allows us to see a day-long pattern. And that gives very, very useful information about what a person's experience and where they're having troubles and what needs to happen to support them in that process of healing.
So that's something that, you know, you probably don't even need it because you know already what it's going to come out, but it gives them validation and also you some guidance about where to go with that individual patient at a particular time.
Oh, absolutely. There really is a lot of information. You could break it down into stage 1, stage 2, or stage 3 adrenal exhaustion. And I have found from the years that I've been doing this, and I can't even tell you the amount of thousands of people that I've done these tests with, but there really is a difference in terms of stage 1 and stage 2 and stage 3 in terms of interventions. Their symptoms may be splayed all over the place. They could have really bad symptoms in stage 1 and even not such bad symptoms in stage 3. But what you want to do is tend to them in slightly different ways based on what those values are, and then it becomes a prioritization of how to help them gently come back from that place of deep, really cellular exhaustion and bring them back into a state of revived energy.
And all those things seem to go together. Like you did bring up allergies. You said one thing is people with adrenal exhaustion will tend to have a slump once again in the afternoon. And I'm sure that you look at the fact that, you know, maybe they had lunch and around 1 o'clock and then they're feeling burnt out around 2 o'clock. It's often linked to a food allergy as well.
Without a doubt, allergic responses are an upswing in both inhalant airborne allergies, but also in food allergies. And we're seeing more and more now that food allergies are almost like cross-pollinating with inhalant allergies and sort of making a kind of super allergy. So you're really weakened in several different ways when you're eating a food that you might be allergic to, genetically modified or whatever it is.
Thank you for bringing that up. I really do think that's a big part of the picture, because why do you think that that might be involved? Let me ask you.
Why do I think genetically modified
might be part of this increased allergenicity?
Well, from my vantage point, at least the way I perceive genetically modified is organisms in foods. Basically, we're in the largest science experiment that's ever been conducted on the human race. because no one has thoroughly researched the long-term effects of genetically modified foods on the human body. And what we know is that there are viruses that are injected into the genetically modified DNA of whatever they're trying to grow, whether it's soy or corn or one of the other products. And those viruses, the capsids of the viruses, the container, if you will, often have things in them that are not scheduled to be there because they're a virus. And so we're potentially putting into our bodies things that have the possibility to stimulate immune responses, whether it's a histamine response, you get an allergic response, and that could also be in your GI tract. It doesn't have to just be something where you're sneezing. You could get diarrhea, or you could get constipation, or you could get bloating, or you could get any of these other things and never really tie it together with the fact that there's something in this genetically altered food that you're responding to in an allergic way. That's the short-term look at it. The long-term look is that we don't know. And that's, frankly, as a practitioner and a human being on the planet, it's horrifying. It's just scary what we potentially are doing to ourselves in terms of lining ourselves up for really chronic and disabling diseases.
Yes, that's so true. So people are really, really lucky if they find their way to you, because what I find, and I'm sure you find, when people come into your office, sometimes it's kind of a last straw, like they've been to a million conventional medical specialists. And why don't they find any of these things?
Well, you'd have to be asking the questions. And I truly, I don't want to, you know, besmirch medicine, because medicine is a wonderful art. But I think that because of the economics and the politics and the fact that we're living in managed careville here, we're not really designed anymore to be asking about people's health. What we are doing is responding to diseases. And so I would even say that we're not really, we don't have a health care system at this point. We have a disease response system. And people are not asking, being asked about health. They're not being asked about, what is it that I need to do to stay healthy if I am healthy, or what is it I need to do to get healthy and then stay healthy if I'm not? And if we don't fundamentally change the dialogue, we're missing out on the opportunity to do more than serve a disease model. And there's a lot of money and a lot of political reasons why things stay the way they stay.
Yeah, that's true. And some of it is like conventional practitioners, first of all, don't have the knowledge you have. And they come to you themselves. I know that for a fact. Because they are not exempt from these feelings of, you know, just what's wrong with me? Tired, weight gain, which of course we should certainly talk about a little bit, and, you know, just not feeling right, even though there may not be any disease process that can be isolated. And you have to look at the more subtle imbalances, such as nutritional imbalances like you look at, adrenal dysfunction, but not to the point where it will show up on a conventional medical test.
Yeah, that's right. It's more of what we're practicing now is functional medicine, which has a lot more to do with helping people stay functioning, because as far as I can see, and no one's ever been able to disprove this to me, if you help keep a person functioning well, then their health is going to be really quite fine. And it really comes down to helping that person figure out how they're not functioning well and then establish lifestyle changes, nutritional changes, supplement and or nutraceutical changes so that they can get to that place where their function is increased. You mentioned about weight and weight gain. I find that is absolutely one of the things that happens with adrenal fatigue, particularly because of the adrenal hormones' relationships to insulin and leptin and the hormones that are associated with blood sugar. I particularly see that folks gain weight around their midsections.
Well, you know what? I want to hold that because it's an important discussion. We do need to take another break and some station ID right here on Progressive Radio Network so people are aware of the other great shows. And when we come back, we will talk about the link between adrenal fatigue and weight gain with our guest, Dr. Gary DeBrandt at drdebrandt.com. We'll be right back with more on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. welcome back once more to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And if you're enjoying today's show, we would love to know about it. You can always like us at Facebook, The Natural Nurse. We have hundreds of people there giving us feedback, and we'd love to hear from you, Facebook, The Natural Nurse, or go to naturalnurse.com. We have all kinds of classes and workshops there. Check under schedules, including the up-and-coming Naval Expo. And you can check at naturalnurse.com under schedules to find the exact date. The location is the Huntington Hilton. We have that event twice a year. Yours truly, Ellen Kamai, will be presenting there, as I always do, because I think it's such a great give back to the community, along with today's guest, Dr. Gary DeBrandt. And Dr. DeBrandt, there's an article you wrote in that free magazine people can get at navalexpo.com, and what will your topic be there that day? I think it's a similar topic to today's show.
Yeah, actually I'll be lecturing twice, one on the thing we're talking about today, which is adrenal fatigue and its complications and things that happen because of it. And the other is on weight loss resistance and the factors that really few people are talking about why people can't lose weight.
Well, there you go. That segues perfectly into our discussion right now. So let's look at that. It's such a big thing. I mean, anything that Dr. Oz says, you know, and sometimes it's ridiculous, like take whatever pill and you're going to be a size 3 tomorrow or something. It just doesn't work that way.
Right. Yeah, it's simplification of these things, I understand, for the purpose of trying to get a message across, but it does a disservice on some level, too, to make people think that these are just sort of take another pill and you'll get to where you want to go. I'm always of a firm believer that, and I even reference myself this way, as I'm a lifestyle doctor, and this actually doesn't, it probably irritates some people, but, you know, I will tell people all the time that, yeah, we'll work with you with supplements and we'll work with you with helping to design what you need to do to eat and change those things, but some of this is about your lifestyle and what you're doing on a day-to-day basis that needs to be brought into the equation. Without that, the goals, you know, are harder to reach and often unsustainable.
That's so true. But what do you do? I mean, if people come to you, and do they come to you for weight loss, or do they come for something else, and then the lifestyle experiences you guide them to really integrate into their life actually results in weight loss?
Well, I think it's both, quite honestly. I think both happen. People come straightly for weight loss, and then people come for other reasons. I'll give you one case history briefly. I had a man come into me who was 5'8" and 387 pounds when he first walked in the door, and basically his MD had said to him, you know, you need to get help. You've got cardiovascular disease. You're on the brink of diabetes. You have autoimmune disease. You've got four other diseases. You need to get some other help because this isn't, you know, the be-all and end-all, and I credit the physician for doing that. And he walked into my office and said, what can you do for me? And I looked at him and looked straight back at him and said, no, what can you do for yourself?
That's the thing.
Yeah, I will help you. I will guide you. I will give you some things. But what can you do for yourself? And I'm happy to tell you, and it took years to do it, but, you know, he went from 387 to the last time that I saw him, he was 180 pounds. And he had transformed his life. He no longer had real symptoms of cardiovascular disease. I'm sure there were still some things there. He never became a diabetic, and the other things that were bothering him either ceased bothering him or really made tremendous strides in all of those areas. The best part, when he came to me, he was 70 years old, and it took me 5 to 6 years to get him to where he was, but he really had changed and revamped his life. And I did most of that. Yes, I definitely put him on supplements, and I did things like that and changed his diet, but I got him doing things in his life differently. And when he really bought into that, that's when the changes really started to, like, compound and grow and morph. And literally he looked and was a different person.
Well, what kind of dietary recommendations would be usual, or are they different for each and every individual patient?
Well, they might be different in some cases, like if you're dealing with a child or dealing with an elderly person, that might need to be taken into consideration. But one thing I do with people right away is I help them to understand there are probably 7 or 8 foods that need to be eliminated from people's diets. and really take that seriously, because they are foods that are keys to weight loss resistance. And they also, in being keys to weight loss resistance, affect the adrenal glands, because the adrenal glands, remember, are trying to help us adapt. And if they can't, because they're overwhelmed by foods we're putting in, then they begin to get fatigued, and the body cannot regulate insulin and the other hormones, and we start gaining fat across the midsection. Once that happens, that becomes its own hormone factory, and then we're off to the races, and things get really, really bad.
Well, are you willing to share with us those key foods? Because that's something people can safely just go ahead and use on their own once they have that information for, you know, to try it.
Oh, absolutely. The big ones are gluten, which is the protein that's found in wheat, but it's also found in barley and rye, and corn. Corn really has a number of different things in it that we don't want to have, but most specifically right now, it's probably one of the most genetically modified things that we'll ever touch, but it's also pretty bad for blood sugar as well. We don't want to do dairy products. We don't want to do peanuts. We don't want to do soy products. Sugar and artificial sweeteners, for a variety of different reasons, you know, for both in those cases, but they're destabilized blood sugar, but they also are so full of things that alter mood and affect the body in so many different ways that we don't want to do the artificial ones. And processed foods. The other one that's questionable for a lot of people these days, and they don't like hearing it, but I keep people off of eggs a lot now, because I see reactions to eggs that I never saw when I first went into practice. And I think that's largely because the chickens that the eggs come from are being fed corn and soy. And those are such genetically modified products now, it's about 100%, that what you're eating is basically what the chicken ate. And that's turning into problems in our bodies.
Well, that's a long list. So basically you cut out that handy-dandy, let's say, peanut butter and jelly sandwich pretty much.
Yeah, but, you know, you can go over to gluten-free bread or other grains if you really want to do a lot of grains. And then you can put in almond butter or cashew butter or sunflower butter or hemp butter. I mean, there really are alternatives. You mentioned before, you know, how we, you know, did all of this testing way back when. I remember when we were first looking at organic foods and having to find them and find gluten-free products on the Internet, because it was the only place you could find them. Nowadays, these alternatives are really abundant and they're really easy to get. I would air a word of caution here. A lot of the things that are gluten-free are not necessarily good for you, because they have other things in them that aren't so good as alternatives, but because everybody's become aware of gluten-free, they see that and automatically think that it's a go. You know, they aren't always a go, because sometimes they have things in them that aren't so good for you either.
So what you're saying, Dr. Gary, is the fact that if something has a label on it, a gluten-free label, it might not actually be so good, because what I see is you still need to read your ingredients, because it can say gluten-free on the label and it can have some of those other grains you just mentioned as having a cross sensitivity, and also have things like a lot of potato starch and be very high on the glycemic index, which you know also influences weight gain. So I would say it's just good to stay with, you know, I really like the work of Michael Pollack and his books. He's talks about eating from the periphery of the grocery store, which is whole foods, pieces of whole foods.
And right. Once you start going into the aisles, you're in the danger zone.
Yeah, all the packaged stuff, even if it says gluten-free. So rice cakes, I find, are a good alternative if people want something to crunch on, depending on the level of arsenic, unfortunately, in the rice cakes. Boy, it's endless in terms of the challenges that we have in staying well, but certainly a good start would be seeing a practitioner like yourself. And we're actually coming to the end of our hour today, so I just want to remind people that you can find Dr. Gary DeBrandt at drdebrandt.com or go to navalexpo.com. You can see both myself and Dr. Gary there, the presentations that we do twice a year at the Naval Expo. Or you can always visit us at naturalnurse.com for more information, or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamite, The Natural Nurse. Thank you so much, Dr. Gary DeBrandt, for being our guest today. And as always, we're hoping to our listeners that you stay healthy.